From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Today, former South African President Nelson Mandela's closing address at the 13th Annual International AIDS Conference in Durban, South Africa. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The Justice Department has launched an investigation into the videotape beating of an African-American man by Philadelphia police officers following a stolen car chase and shootout. A mob of a dozen officers, mostly white and some in civilian clothes, are seen on a tape dragging Thomas Jones from a police car and kicking and beating him. The incident has sparked comparisons with the 1991 Rodney King case that ignited rioting in Los Angeles after four white officers were acquitted of state charges. Two of the LAPD officers were eventually convicted of federal civil rights charges. Before the tape beating, officers allegedly chased Jones in a stolen car until it crashed. Police say they then exchanged gunfire with him. Jones was reported to be in fair condition yesterday at Temple University Hospital with injuries to his abdomen and arms. The incident happened less than 3 weeks before the Republican National Convention. There, police brutality will be one of the major issues of protest. Meanwhile, the Philadelphia Inquirer has been reporting that unidentified men with cameras have been seen openly watching and photographing at least five protest planning meetings of the Philadelphia Direct Action Group in the past month. Philadelphia police say the men are not from the police department. The FBI refused to comment. The surveillance became so open and steady last month that the American Civil Liberties Union sent a letter to city officials reminding them that former Mayor Wilson Good issued a directive in 1987 prohibiting any police surveillance or infiltration without the approval of the police chief and city's managing director. Philadelphia police have stepped up preparations for dealing with the protests at the Republican convention in the wake of large demonstrations in Seattle last November and Washington, D.C. in April. In recent weeks, a tip sheet distributed to Philadelphia area security officials made clear that police consider white middle-class youths among the most likely anti-corporate protesters. The tip sheet, provided to the Philadelphia Inquirer by a security firm on condition of anonymity, says that the police department would like to be notified if there is, quote, a significant increase in the population of predominantly young white males and females in a particular area, especially those who dress in ragtag clothing and dye their hair in multicolors, unquote. The United States and Vietnam signed a landmark trade agreement yesterday. The trade deal, if approved by Congress, would reduce U.S. tariffs on Vietnamese products. In return, Vietnam will lower its tariffs on American products, provide copyright protection to U.S. companies, and reduce restrictions on investment by American companies in Vietnam. Former Democratic presidential candidate Bill Bradley has endorsed Vice President Al Gore for president, and then the two laid into Texas Governor George W. Bush. In dropping out of the Democratic presidential primary 4 months ago, Bradley voiced support of Gore, but he declined to say he actually endorsed him, who he angrily accused of distorting his record and proposals during their tough campaign. Gore has said Bradley will have a prominent speaking role at the Democratic National Convention next month and that he expects to make additional appearances with him. While Gore has declined to offer any hint of who his vice presidential running mate may be, Bradley has said he has no interest in the job. Gore is expected to announce his vice presidential candidate before the Democratic convention takes place. Federal safety regulators are launching a major study into the risks of using cell phones, internet devices, and other electronic distractions, including dashboard navigation systems, while driving. The study by the AAA found that a quarter of crashes each year are caused by drivers distracted by other activities. For example, glancing from the road to insert a compact disc, for example, makes a driver six times more likely to have an accident than glancing at the fuel gauge. The Reverend Al Sharpton says it's an outrage federal authorities won't prosecute four police officers who shot and killed an unarmed motorist in Morris County, New Jersey. The U.S. Attorney's Office closed its investigation of the June 99 shooting of Stanton Crew. Insufficient evidence was cited as the reason to not pursue civil rights charges. And this news from Georgia, a police captain reviewing television broadcast tapes of two officers punching and kicking a drunken driving suspect says the incident appears to be a textbook arrest. News helicopters filmed the roadside arrest of Marshall Studdard after he led police in a 20-minute chase Wednesday. The tapes show officers punching Studdard as he lay on the ground while one officer also appears to kick the man. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Former South African President Nelson Mandela called today for a stepped-up government fight against mother-to-child transmission of the AIDS virus, a topic that has brought South Africa under a crush of international criticism. Today, we wrap up our coverage of the 13th International AIDS Conference in Durban, South Africa, with a debate on the causes of AIDS. We'll be joined by Dr. Peter Duisberg, who is a member of the Mbeki panel that made recommendations to the South African president, as well as the health minister of the Pan-Africanist Congress in South Africa. But first, we bring you the full speech of the former president as he closed today's ceremony in South Africa, Nelson Mandela.
Thank you. Thank you. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, if there are Germans and New Zealanders here, let them take off their jackets and be happy, because we congratulated the Germans for winning the bid for 2006. And also, Prime Minister Helen Clark of New Zealand, for the stand she took, notwithstanding what happened in Zurich. And therefore, you are welcome, all of you. To have been asked to deliver the closing address at this conference, which in a very literal sense concerns itself with matters of life and death, weighs heavily upon me, for the gravity of the responsibility placed on one. No disrespect is intended towards the many other occasions where one has been privileged to speak. If I say that this is the one event where every word uttered, every gesture made, had to be measured against the effect, it can and will have on the lives of millions of concrete, real human beings all over this continent and planet. This is not an academic conference. This is, as I understand it, a gathering of human beings concerned about turning around one of the greatest threats humankind has faced, and certainly the greatest after the end of the great wars of the previous century. It is never my custom to use words lightly. If 27 years in prison have done anything to us, it was to use the silence of solitude to make us understand how precious words are and how real speech is in its impact upon the way people live and die. If by way of introduction I stress the importance of the way we speak, it is also because there's so much unnecessary attention around this conference had been directed towards the dispute that is unintentionally distracting from the real life and death issues we are confronted with as a country. Confronted with as a country, a region, a continent, and the world. I do not know nearly enough about science and its methodologies, or about the politics of science and scientific practice, to even wish to start contributing to the debate that has been raging on the perimeters of this conference. I am, however, old enough and have gone through sufficient conflicts and disputes in my lifetime to know that in all disputes, a point is arrived at where no party, no matter how right or wrong it might have been at the start of that dispute, will any longer be totally in the right or totally in the wrong. Such a point, I believe, has been reached in this debate. The president of this country is a man of great intellect who takes scientific thinking very seriously, and he leads a government that I know to be committed to those principles of science and reason. The scientific community of this country, I also know, holds dearly to the principle of freedom of scientific inquiry, unencumbered by undue political interference in and direction of science. Now, however, the ordinary people of the continent and the world, and particularly the poor who on our continent will again carry a disproportionate burden of this scourge. Would, if anybody cared to ask their opinion, wish that the dispute about the primacy of politics or science be put on the back burner and that we proceed to address the needs and concerns of those suffering and dying. And this can only be done in partnership. I come from a long tradition of collective leadership, consultative decision making, and joint action towards the common good. We have overcome much that many thought insurmountable through an adherence to those practices. In the face of the grave threat posed by HIV/AIDS, we have to rise above our differences and combine our efforts to save our people. History will judge us harshly if we fail to do so now and right now. Let us not equivocate. A tragedy of unprecedented proportion is unfolding in Africa. AIDS today in Africa is claiming more lives than the sum total of all wars, famines, and floods. And the ravages of such deadly diseases as malaria. It is devastating families and communities, overwhelming and depleting healthcare services, and robbing schools of both students and teachers. Business has suffered or will suffer losses of personnel, productivity, and profits. Economic growth is being undermined, and scarce development resources have to be diverted to deal with the consequences of the pandemic. HIV/AIDS is having a devastating impact on families, communities, society, and economies. Decades have been chopped from life expectancy, and young child mortality is expected to more than double in the most severely affected countries of Africa. AIDS is clearly a disaster, effectively wiping out the development gains of the past decades and sabotaging the future. Earlier this week, we were shocked to learn that within South Africa, one in two, that is half, of our young people will die of AIDS. The most frightening thing is that all of these infections, which statistics tell us about, and the attendant human suffering can be prevented.
You're listening to former South African President Nelson Mandela speaking this morning in Durban, South Africa, in the closing ceremony of the 13th annual International AIDS Conference. We will go back to the speech in just a minute here on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers, as we go back to Durban, South Africa, for the speech of former South African President Nelson Mandela, who closed today's 13th annual International AIDS Conference.
Something must be done as a matter of the greatest urgency, and with nearly two decades of dealing with the epidemic, we now do have some experience of what works. The experience in a number of countries has taught that HIV infection can be prevented through investing in information and life skills development for young people, promoting abstinence, safe sex, and the use of condoms, and ensuring the early treatment of sexually transmitted diseases are some of the steps needed and about which there can be no dispute. Ensuring that people, especially the young, have access to voluntary and confidential HIV counseling and testing services, and introducing measures to reduce mother-to-child transmission have been proven. Have been proven to be essential in the fight against AIDS. We have recognized the importance of addressing the stigmatization and discrimination, and of providing safe and supportive environments for people affected by HIV/AIDS. The experiences of Uganda, Senegal, and Thailand have shown that serious investments in and mobilization around these actions make a real difference. Stigma and discrimination can be stopped. New infections can be prevented, and the capacity of families and communities to care for people living with HIV/AIDS can be enhanced. It is not, I must add, as if the South African government has not moved significantly on many of these areas. It was the first deputy president in my government that oversaw and drove the initiatives in this regard, and as president, continues to place this issue on top of the national and continental agenda. He will, with me, be the first to concede that much more remains to be done. I do not doubt for one moment that he will proceed to tackle this task with the resolve and dedication he is known for. The challenge is to move from rhetoric to action. And action at an unprecedented intensity and scale. There is a need for us to focus on what we know works. We need to break the silence, banish stigma and discrimination, and ensure total inclusiveness within the struggle against AIDS. Those who are infected with this terrible disease do not want stigma, they want love. We need both bold initiatives to prevent a new infection among young people and large-scale action to prevent a mother-to-child transmission. And at the same time, we need to continue the international effort of searching for appropriate vaccines. We need to aggressively treat opportunistic infections. And we need to work with families and communities to care for children and young people, to protect them from violence and abuse, and to ensure that they grow up in a safe and supportive environment. For this, there is need for us to be focused, to be strategic, and to mobilize all of our resources and alliances, and to sustain the effort until this war is won. About 2 years ago, I invited one of the stars who opened this conference, Kosi Johnson. And as I spoke to him, I asked him a question. What would you like to be when you're old? He says, well, I don't know. I say, well, you have enough time to answer that question. I say, don't you want to be a president? He said, it looks like hard work. But the point is that all of us have a duty to give support and love to all those who on many occasions have become HIV positive, not because of any bad behavior on their part, especially children. I invited to my house a young fellow who is 16, but he is about this size. And he asked me a question I dreaded, because in the course of the conversation with other children, some suffering from cancer, others from HIV, others from tuberculosis. And he said to me, "What do you think of men like myself?" It was very difficult to answer, because he suffers from a type of cancer which affects the bone, which has made his bones brittle. And every time somebody touches him roughly, there is a breakage somewhere in his body. And he asked me this question: "What do you think of people like myself?" The difficulty was that I did not want to give him a false hope. At the same time, I could not refrain from answering the question. I then said to him, "The important thing is that you are alive. You have security of having two parents who love you. You are a very bright and intelligent youngster. Don't think you will leave your family, your beloveds, your people, your country under a sense of shame. You must be determined that you will disappear under a cloud of glory." And I quoted to him a verse which I often repeat, especially when I'm faced with the question of having to say goodbye to somebody. "Cowards die many times before their deaths. The valiant never tastes of death but once. Of all the wonders I yet have seen, it seems most strange that man should fear seeing that death, a necessary end, will come when it will come." That was Shakespeare, and everyone who listens to those words disappears under a cloud of glory, becomes a worthy candidate to immortality. And that is the example that we want. But as I said elsewhere this morning, we want to move away from rhetoric to practical action. We want men and women who know, as a poet has said, that in the rough marble, beauty hides unseen. In the still air, music lies unheard. We want a man and women who can penetrate the exterior and appreciate the beauty inside every human being. We need, and there is increasing evidence of African resolve to fight this war. Others will not save us if we do not primarily commit ourselves. Let us, however, not underestimate the resources required to conduct this battle. Partnership with the international community is vital. A constant theme in all our messages has been that in the interdependent and globalized world, we have indeed again become the keepers of our brother and sister. That cannot be more graphically the case than in the common fight against HIV/AIDS. As one small contribution to the great combined effort that is required, I have instructed my foundation to explore in consultation with others the best way in which we can be involved in the battle against this terrible scourge ravaging our continent and world. It is, again, not something that can be achieved by a single individual, no matter how important, how influential. It is essentially a partnership in each country between government, because no government anywhere in the world has sufficient resources on its own to be able to fight and win this battle. Therefore, there must be a partnership between business and the community. Without that, this battle will not be won. And also to use the skills, the experience, the researches that have been conducted all over the world in order to enlighten our people as how to approach this tragedy. With these words, I thank all of you most sincerely.
Nelson Mandela concluding his AIDS address in Durban.
Which of the heads of state in the world has impressed you most? Well, I have to be careful because an answer to that question could lead to a diplomatic row. And many countries I don't mention could withdraw their ambassadors from South Africa. But I often say that my heroes are not necessarily men and women who have titles. It is the humble men and women that you find in all communities. It is the humble men and women you find in all communities, but who have chosen the world as the theater of their operations, who fight the greatest challenges, the socio-economic issues that face the world, like poverty, illiteracy, a disease, lack of housing, inability to send your children to school. Those are my heroes. If any head of state, if any head of state qualifies in this, he is my hero. Thank you.
Former South African President Nelson Mandela addressing the 13th annual International AIDS Conference in Durban, South Africa, as he closed out the week just hours ago in Durban. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! When we return, a debate on the causes of AIDS. Stay with us. Karanga Day! You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we remain in Durban, South Africa, to bring you the remarks of both those who endorse the mainstream point of view on AIDS and one of the leading dissidents in the world today on AIDS, Dr. Peter Duisberg. South African President Thabo Mbeki has come under harsh criticism from AIDS activists at the convention for his positions on the disease. Before we go to the debate, Bob Lederer, who's joined us throughout the week, will give us some concluding comments on this controversy. Bob Lederer, a senior editor at PAS Magazine and producer at Pacifica Station WBAI in New York. Bob Lederer.
Good morning, Amy. Well, the dispute that former President Mandela referred to as distracting from the real life and death issues facing people in countries hard hit by AIDS, such as South Africa, is the one set off by President Mbeki's engagement in a dialogue with the dissidents who challenged HIV as the cause of AIDS that began this spring and led to his appointment of a study panel of 35 scientists from around the world to look into not only that question, but the broader issues of what is the proper strategy for fighting AIDS in South Africa, which he said should not be rubber stamping strategies developed in Western countries with different issues in the epidemic. However, he has come under criticism from many parts of the AIDS community, both doctors, researchers, and scientists, as well as activists, for giving credence to views that have long been discredited. And this week there was a declaration announced by 5,000 scientists around the world saying the overwhelming evidence points to HIV as the cause of AIDS. And finally, in the context of the overall policies of the Mbeki administration, there's increasing calls from labor unions and human rights activists and others for a critical look at the broad policies of the Mbeki government in terms of international corporations at a time when drug companies are being heavily pressured both domestically by activists in South Africa and around the world to lower their prices and stop interfering with efforts at generic manufacturing here in South Africa. President Mbeki's policies are being questioned as a diversion that actually postpone moving forward on South Africa's needed, what is considered a needed challenge to those foreign corporations.
Thank you, Bob Lederer. You are sitting with Dr. Costa Gazi, who is head of the Department of Public Health at Cecilia Makaweni Hospital in Eastern Cape, South Africa, and Secretary for Health of the Pan-Africanist Congress, an opposition party to the African National Congress. And joining us on the line from Germany is Dr. Peter Duisberg, one of the leading AIDS dissidents in the world today, also a member of President Mbeki's panel. Let us begin with you, Dr. Duisberg. While the panel endorsed the mainstream point of view on AIDS, what did you recommend, along with a minority of those on the panel?
We recommended to treat AIDS according to its cause, to define first what the cause is, identify the cause, and then act accordingly, rather than act and see what happens now, where we have 18 years of AIDS treatment and have yet to cure one single AIDS patient. And in fact, we are prescribing drugs that are the most toxic that medicine has ever been prescribing to people DNA chain terminators, that is, like AZT, that have been developed 30 years ago for cancer chemotherapy. We are prescribing that in America and in Europe and about to possibly in Africa to 200,000 people. Most of them are healthy. That is a serious liability and a serious problem that rightfully Mbeki is trying to discuss and possibly prevent to affect also Africa. So the conclusion of, let's say, one half of this panel, of course, the ones who you call dissidents, those who consider AIDS a chemical epidemic, one that is not contagious, that is not spreading like an infectious epidemic, that has never infected a doctor in America in 750,000 AIDS cases, a doctor was never infected. A chemical epidemic would be caused in Africa by a lack of nutrients, like poverty that Mbeki just emphasized at the end of his speech. If you take America, for example, which is always a leading example for everybody in the world, of course, was the Pelaka epidemic in the early part of the 20th century in the south of America. Thousands of farmers were dying there, 10,000 of them, because of a vitamin deficiency. And the then precursor of the CDC prevented Goldberger, a scientist, to prevail on a nutritional or chemical explanation, insisted it was a microbial disease, and the microbe was never found. And 20 years later, and 20,000 deaths later, finally they yielded to Goldberger, and it was recognized as a nutritional epidemic, and by supplementing nutrition, the Pelaka was gone within less than a year. So we recommended, in the line of Mbeki's suspicion, that poverty is the prevailing cause of AIDS in Africa and that we should invest into nutrition, sanitation, and better housing, as you also mentioned. Those would be the things that would make the difference there.
Dr. Costa Gazi, Secretary for Health of the Pan-Africanist Congress, you're a pediatrician. You say you're going to prescribe HIV-positive pregnant women with antiviral drugs. What is your response to Dr. Duisberg?
Thank you. I have a lengthy response. I'll try and keep it short and to the point. Yes, I am trying against the advice and the trend of my health authority to provide nevirapine for pregnant mothers who are HIV positive, preceded by counseling and testing of the mothers and post-test counseling if they turn up to be positive. So my action is based entirely on the belief that HIV causes AIDS. I do concede that we have a lot of poverty in Africa and there's a lot of malnutrition, but the behavior of this disease complex, which has emerged in the last 20 years, is unique and has spread and is spreading in Africa very rapidly. Professor Duisberg has to cite different reasons and different causes for the spread of this complex, I think I will have to call it, and the spread of this virus in Africa as opposed to the developed world. We've had those conditions for a long time, and in South Africa, for instance, we have had 6 years of a democratic government, and yet we have a relentless increase in HIV infection and in AIDS deaths. Now, having a democratic government should have meant that there was some poverty alleviation and some attack on malnutrition during the last 6 years, but they have not affected this infection for one moment. I believe that our president is actually latched onto the what I should call the denialist theory of AIDS. Because it suits his economic policy. As a member of the opposition party, I have a political view of his political agenda. That his policy of GEAR, what's called the GEAR policy, the growth, employment, and redistribution policy, which does none of those things, which is designed to attract foreign investment into South Africa, has meant that he has been cutting back on social expenditure, that is on health, welfare, housing, and on education. And the denial theory that the dissidents have been pronouncing fits in with cutbacks in the public service, because if antiretroviral drugs were made available in the public sector, as they are in the private sector, they haven't been banned in South Africa, they are fully available if you've got money, then the public sector would have become very popular, and this is not what is wanted by our present government. So I don't think that it's because our president is trying to be a scientist or that he really believes in the dissident view, because there are too many other contradictory actions by our government on this issue. They have carried out some attempts to curb the epidemic, totally ineffective. But nevertheless, they are based entirely on the fact that it's regarded as a sexually transmitted disease in essence, and that it is caused by a virus.
Is the Mbeki government threatening to prosecute you for giving antiretrovirals to HIV-positive pregnant women?
Well, I was charged 2 years ago with a disciplinary charge of bringing the Minister of Health into disrepute, because I said I'm taking her to court for being negligent and causing the death of babies who could have been saved if their mothers had access to a test and to the antiretroviral drug AZT at that time. I was disciplined. I was found guilty of bringing that minister into disrepute and was fined R1,000. I've appealed against that judgment, and I'm waiting for the Public Service Commission to hear the appeal. I haven't changed my view at all. I have read and I've listened to lots of things and lots of people, and this conference here, for instance, has just endorsed my view, and I'm pleasantly surprised to find that my view is coincides with a vast majority of view of people who are concerned with this epidemic which is sweeping the world, and particularly here in Africa.
Dr. Duisberg, sorry, your response.
To the science, then, I focus on. As Dr. Jassy said, he's believing that this disease is unique. But I wonder whether he ever looked at the definition of African AIDS or American AIDS, either the Bankery definition, the World Health Organization's definition, or the Centers for Disease. Nothing could be further from the truth that this is a fact, that this is specific. It is the most unspecific. In fact, S in AIDS stands for syndrome. It's a collection of 30 previously known diseases that are in part completely unrelated. Or maybe Dr. Ghazi knows the relationship between weight loss and dementia and tuberculosis and diarrhea and cervical cancer and Kaposi sarcoma and candida and herpes and many other diseases that are in endemic, in particular in countries with malnutrition as Africa. So those diseases are as heterogeneous and as common as you can possibly get in a country like this. And it is completely contrary to any scientific precedent that so many different diseases that have nothing in part in common, not even immunodeficiency, because immunodeficiency doesn't cause dementia or cancer or weight loss. It is completely unprecedented that this should be all caused by a microbe. Perhaps you and Dr. Ghazi will remember, almost all viruses that cause diseases are named after the diseases that they cause. Their specificity is inherent in their very limited genetic information. So the flu virus causes flu, and the polio causes polio, and the hepatitis causes hepatitis. They have a very narrow range of what they can do with a limited amount of information. They're specific for certain regions in the body, for certain receptors, as we call that, and tropisms. But they don't cause, the polio virus causes polio, not diarrhea, not dementia, not Kaposi, not cervical cancer. And the same is true for all other viruses we know, including the retroviruses. They are even more specific. Not one of them causes a disease that includes cell death. So it is ridiculous to say this is a denial theory. These are the facts. You cannot reconcile these things with a microbe, at least none that we know of. And to call it a denial theory, to be against drugs that I'm sure, as Dr. Ghazi knows, were developed in part 30 years ago for chemotherapy. ACT is a DNA chain terminator. It's a substance designed to kill human cells for chemotherapy. In chemotherapy, you're dealing with a serious problem. A major parasite, a cancer of a kilo or more, is trying to spread, and you cannot remove it, and then you kill in the hope the cancer dies before the patient dies. And the cancer cells typically grow faster than normal cells, so often that works. But here we are giving it to a pregnant mother. Imagine what we are doing. You're giving a pregnant mother, in which a baby, an unborn baby, is growing at a rate faster than cancer, a DNA chain terminator. This would have been considered a heinous crime only a few years ago if it weren't for the HIV-AIDS hypothesis, which they have yet to prove. Look at the Durban Declaration. It's a political statement, no scientific proof. We do have a serious problem here.
See? Dr. Costa-Ghazi.
Well, we certainly have a serious problem here. We have a virus that is lethal, that is killing people, and it's not surprising that we require strong drugs to combat it. The question of whether AIDS should be more of a uniform, singular disease that has a single presentation can be easily refuted, because this is a very unique virus that attacks the very defenses of the body, that attacks the immune system, which is the system that protects you against all sorts of opportunistic bacteria, fungi, viruses, and other microorganisms that are continually attacking everybody all the time, wherever you are, whether you're malnourished, whether you are well-nourished, whether you live anywhere in the world.
Let me ask you something, Dr. Costa-Ghazi. With President Mbeki's questioning of the origins of AIDS and whether these drugs are actually deal with AIDS, does it mean he doesn't take on the international pharmaceutical companies pushing them to provide, domestic development of drug companies and the international drug companies to provide those drugs free?
Well, he's doing both things. He's trying to get these drugs at a lower price on the one hand, and on the other, he refuses to make a comment such as Winnie Mandela made last Sunday, that HIV causes AIDS. I mean, this was a very straightforward statement that was in the Durban Declaration. A mere 5,000 scientists, eminent scientists all over the world, signed that declaration, which was dumped into the dustbin, according to the presidential spokesman.
We have to wrap up the discussion. So I want to ask Dr. Duesberg, if people want to get more information on your theories and those of other AIDS dissidents, where can they go on the web?
There's a Duesberg.com now on the web, yes. There's also a book I have published 2 years ago. It's called Inventing the AIDS Virus, and it's published by Regnery Publishing in Washington, D.C. You can get it from Amazon.com.
I want to thank you both very much for being with us, Dr. Peter Duesberg. That's Duesberg.com, professor of molecular and cell biology at University of California, Berkeley, one of the leading AIDS dissidents in the world today, and Dr. Costa-Ghazi, head of the Department of Public Health, Cecilia Makaweni Hospital, Eastern Cape, South Africa. And that does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Produced by Jeremy Scahill, Anthony Sloan, our engineer. Thanks to John Riley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.